Good morning. This is Les Arms, speaking on behalf of the Adams County Historical Society, welcoming you to another segment of Adams County History. The good old summertime, July, school is out. Families think of vacations that may involve travel. But what about the motoring public of years ago? Almost as soon as the automobile was invented and passable roads developed for them, Mobile Americans took off across the country, sons of the pioneers who had traveled westward over the Oregon Trail only a few decades earlier. But these automobile travelers were not moving their households. They were just going. They were just out for a spin. They were taking trips of several days, maybe several weeks, to visit relatives or just to see new sights. We have to remember, the automobile had just been invented. We're talking about a car such as a Model T, 20 horsepower, no roll-up windows, no power steering. Also, the top speed, 42 miles an hour. The first automobile appeared in Hastings in 1901, and the first automobile accident occurred 10 years later when two cars collided at an intersection. Now, by 1921, there were 4,000 motor vehicles in Adams County. There was one for every five men, women, and children. In the early 20s, the facilities for the traveling public provided by the city of Hastings was in Prospect Park, and it attracted thousands of motoring tourists every summer. In fact, an estimated 10,000 people visited in 1923 alone during the tourist season. But it was the people from out of town that wanted to use these tourist facilities that were in Hastings. Representatives of almost every state in the Union. The Hastings Tribune story of July 23, 1923, reported that on some nights, there were as many as 10 different states represented in the park. Yes, 10 different states. Now keep in mind, we're talking a Model T era, top speed 42 miles an hour. The facilities were spartan, a two-room stone bungalow on the park grounds to provide a kitchen, laundry, and shower amenities, a bulletin board that would give current information about the condition of the DLD, that was the Detroit-Lincoln-Denver Highway, or the Greenland Highway, the Harding Highway, the Potash, the Oregon Trail, the SYA. The Lions Club had built two large ovens on the ground, and the city paid a policeman to be on patrol duty every night until midnight. In the park, the tourists would pitch their tents, and they would pay 50 cents per night. The facilities were so popular that many tourists stopped only by day, cooking their meals and using the laundry equipment, moving on before nightfall so they wouldn't have to pay that 50 cents. Travelers of the times loaded their square black automobiles. Few cars were painted any other color. Black was the predominant color. And put their gear in carriers that was clamped to the right-hand running board of their Essex, their Rio, their Willie's Knight, their Maxwell, their Chrysler, their Ford, their Chevrolet automobile. They made sure the fabric top of the automobile was secure. They made sure the spare tire was in good condition because you could certainly count on a flat tire. Some experienced travelers also carried tins of spare fuel. For occasionally, it was difficult to find a service station, even a blacksmith shop that would sell gasoline, although there were certainly plenty of filling stations in Hastings. In the mid-20s, there were 17 filling stations on 2nd Street alone, including one at 2nd and Kansas, highway intersections, and others. The travelers were usually family groups. Hastings Chamber of Commerce reckoned there was an average of four persons per car at the Prospect Park grounds. When I speak of Prospect, we now know it as Chautauqua. At that time, the only other facilities for the traveling public were hotels. A few years later, some homes in Hastings were putting up signs in their front windows saying, rooms for travelers, tourist rooms. The kitchen facilities at the park were a godsend to travelers because there were very few quick lunch restaurants available in town. Two Hastings men, Harry Quiggle, P.R. Burke, fully aware that the automobile was here, invented an automobile automatic cooker that you place on your running board and then attach it to the exhaust pipe so that the heat would cook the meat and potatoes by steam pressure. A 30-minute run of any automobile was supposed to be sufficient to cook the meal. The men set up a factory capable of producing 40 cookers per day in 1923. Most of our travelers cooked their meals in the standard facilities of the park. By 1924, the first drive-in cooking or heating facility opened in Hastings. It was called a roadside lunch enterprise, and it was called La Colina. It was a Spanish-style structure at the corner of 2nd and Laird on the highway and not far from Prospect Park. Arrangements will be made to cater for those who wish to be served without leaving their cars, the newspaper story said. Well, not much drive-in business was later was generated. So the first really active drive-in food establishment were some root beer stands that started 3 or 4 years later, and gradually they added a few sandwiches and some sweetened drinks. There were no motels, there were no drive-ins, no credit cards. The story in 1926 in the Tribune says, almost every week, some tourist finds himself strapped in Hastings, has to sell jewelry, his watch, or something to wire for more money, because there were no checking accounts, there were no credit cards, and the only resource the travelers had was whatever he carried for cash in his hip pocket. By the 1920s, the highways were graded and they were graveled, although the quandary roads, the second roads, were not. You had many bumpy dirt trails that were impassable after a rainstorm. Although some know-it-alls objected to the gravel that was used, soon gravel was being used more and more on the highway. Well, whenever gravel was used, it raised dust as the automobiles whirled along at 20, even 30 miles an hour or faster, because you see the speed limit was now 35 miles an hour, and in Hastings, it was 15 in town. By the 1920s, nobody would be caught dead wearing dusters and goggles without their cars. Those have been necessary for a decade or two because windshields were not on the motor cars. But in 1923, the cars had glass windows in front. Few of them were capable of being cranked and rolled up 2 or 3 inches at the bottom. Most of them were hinged at the top, braced at the side. By present-day standards, the roads were narrow and straight. Passing the almost omnipresent road grader was perilous. And many times, the motorist found himself with a flat tire because the blade of the machine had kicked up glass or nails. There were few curves on the roads. You came to a corner, if it was a square corner, you had to slow down to avoid skidding as you made a 90-degree turn. Cross-country travelers often followed the highways easily, simply by keeping on the gravel roads, except for the occasional narrow concrete post. One gentleman related to me that he had traveled during the mid-20s via Model T. He said they made the trip from Hastings to Denver. It was a full 3-day trip. By midsummer of 1926, the highways were marked. Hastings Tribune on June 30th carried a picture on the front page showing the new signs in place. Number 2 was the Greenland Highway. Number 38 was the DLD. But sometimes that number only went for a certain number of miles. Finally, federal officials got to the point that they had things reasonably well marked to commemorate often on them. Later, we found out, for example, that Highway 6 was the old DLD, came straight through Hastings on 2nd Street, going as far west as Ingleside, where it curved back to the south. Highway 281 went north out of Hastings on Kansas Avenue, crossing the Union Pacific tracks before it went east to the road that is now the highway. The philosophy of that day was that people took highways to go to town, not to get around the town. By 1927, the tourist facilities at Prospect Park had proven so beneficial to the commerce of Hastings that the city council leased a gentleman 2 acres of land adjoining the park that he could build cabins for tourists. Each cabin having essential household equipment and an adjoining covered area for his automobile. No longer did the tourist need to bring his own tent. They could stay in cabins provided with water, sewer facilities, a range stove for cooking, and bunk beds. Hot and cold shower baths were provided in the bath cabin. And sometimes there would be a stove available for warmth as well. The first series of 4 double cabins, providing 8 units, was completed, and they were filled almost every night once they were finished. And so a second series of cabins were started to build. With each addition of the tourist facilities, the city was so proud, reporting that the tourists were spending money in town while they were in Hastings. The camping facilities were an extra allurement for people who came to the county fair. The park was only a few minutes' drive from the fairgrounds. Eventually, the city got out of the tourist business. In the latter part of the 1920s, private entrepreneurs built the Showboat, a filling station and a supply shop in the shape of a Mississippi River showboat, complete with a side wheel moored on the Nebraska prairies. On 3 sides of the showboat were long lines of tourist cabins. The showboat was located on the highway east of town and was there until the 1960s. But from then on, direct services for tourists were the business of private companies, not Hastings, but the town was pleased that it had been a pioneer in providing facilities to the touring public. Again, so ends another segment in Moments in Time. This has been a presentation of the Adams County Historical Society. Again, we invite you, be a part of our society. We invite you to listen, to learn, and to consider joining it so we might preserve the history of our county. You can also visit our website at adamshistory.org. So, this is Les Harms inviting you. Tune in on the 2nd and the 4th Friday of each month. Thank you for listening.